Here we are, back with the Monster Truck Outlaws List podcast, episode number 42. Man, these episodes just keep rolling on.
Well, you're yodeling about that. Man, that was just a confusing intro. Like, it wasn't showing up on our end. And, like, I saw my face. I saw our guest's video start playing. We're not professional, folks. We're just pretend. So thanks for joining us.
Monster Truck guys. Yep.
Yes.
And you know what? We're approaching, I believe we're approaching our 1 year anniversary of doing this, Phil. It's hard to believe. Slowly approaching.
Getting old.
We are getting old. But I'll tell you what, we got a great guest tonight planned, and it's going to be a great show. And Phil, you know what? Tell the people who the guest is tonight.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, when you're at a lot of these events, you get to meet a lot of awesome people over the years. And so many capacities, and tonight's guest is a perfect example from a personal standpoint. He's someone that's always treated me very fair and has always been a great guy to be around. Anytime Jimmy Crean gave him a call, he'd answer the phone, and just like that, he'd be driving the truck. He's been in the game for so many years in so many capacities. And I know he says he's retired. He's going to tell a story here tonight, but I can't wait to share a lot of memories and hear a lot of stories from a true veteran of the West Coast monster truck scene. Our guest tonight is Russell Steely.
Russell, welcome to the show. How are you doing on this great Friday night?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Doing good. Doing real good.
Always great to see you, Russell, man. It's been a bit since seeing you in person, but happy to have you here on the podcast.
It has been a while. I think that was, about 2018 over in Oakland?
Something crazy. I'm getting old. Numbers running together.
Good memories.
Wait. You get my age, man. You forget everything.
Oh, yes.
Well, speaking of good memories, let's get it started. Russell, so let's talk about it. How did you get your start in motorsports?
Well, I was doing a sideshow. I had some quads back in the day and mainly just raced them out on the sand over in Pismo Beach, just playing around with my buddies, and decided to do a show. And we were the side act and went out, did the show. And was doing a little tricks and crazy stuff while I was racing. And I went by myself, none of my friends, nobody was there. I didn't know anybody. And I happened to be loading my quad up. And this guy walks up and says, "Hey, you did a good job riding that quad." I had no idea who this guy was. And I said, "Thank you." And he said, "You think you can do that in one of those trucks?" And he pointed at one of the monster trucks. And I said, "Man, I wish." I said, "I just got to know the right guy." And he goes, "Well, I own those trucks." Well, that was Paul Schaefer. And stayed in contact with him for a short while and ended up going to work for him. Didn't stay too long and got an offer from Craig Christensen. Went to work, actually moved to Ogden, Utah, and went to work for Craig for about a year. And then met Jimmy and Don Creighton in Red Bluff and happened to hop semis basically at the event and jumped on their team and been there ever since. So 14 years with Jimmy, retired in 18, and he's always been trying to get me to come back and do a show, or I'll get the itch and I'll call him, see if he's got any shows coming up. And so I'm technically retired, but we'll see. The itch never goes away.
You never stay retired in this business, and we'll break it down for sure tonight. But you mentioned Paul Schaefer. That's a name that I don't think we've really talked about on our podcast here. I don't think it's a story a lot of people know that you were a part of. You know, what were your experiences working for Paul Schaefer Motorsports for however long you did?
Well, as soon as I packed up all my belongings here, I headed back and went to Indiana and was there one night, and he put me in his semi and I drove it right to where you guys are right now, right out to Phoenix. And I was down there with BJ Johnson and Larry Swim, Brian Harwood, a whole lot of those guys. And it was one of Paul's shows himself. And I was down there for 2 weeks doing displays, moving trucks around, all that. And I didn't know anything about monster trucks. All I knew was that they're loud and they jump. And some of the guys showed me the ropes and how to start them and move them around, the way the rear steering works and the front steering and all that kind of stuff. And we did the show. And on my way back, I happened to be in contact with Craig Christensen all along, even when I got hired through Paul, just as I guess it would be internet friend back then. That's how long ago it is. I didn't even know they had internet back then. and he offered me a position, and it was closer to my family in Utah, closer to home. So I decided to jump ship and go work for Craig. And I did that for about a year with him.
So working with Craig, and that we've had a lot of Craig Christensen, we've had his sons on. So that's a very familiar name. And you're traveling the road with one of the smartest minds in the business with Craig Christensen. You know, what was that like? You're there for a year. You had to learn a lot. Oh, did you catch that?
You. Yeah, nope, I lost you there. I had a little blank spot.
Okay, if you can hear me now, I was just talking about, you know, you get to work with Craig Christensen. For a whole year, one of the brightest minds in the business. You know, what did you learn from working with Craig Christensen for a year?
Craig was a very good teacher, but a guy that gets mad very easily. You knew to get the hell out of his way when he got upset.
Craig basically, he was in the middle of building one of the Dragon Slayers. I don't know which number it was, but he was in the middle of that. Might have been his last one he had.
And kind of got to see how things went in place, where the motors went, how the motors were mounted. Because I really knew nothing about these trucks. Paul Jensen and Mike were both there most of the time, and they showed me how to charge the shocks, how to roll the tires around. It was a one-on-one to monster trucks going through Craig. And they had the patience to teach me what I needed to know just to be a on-the-spot crew guy, pretty much. I never did any driving for Craig, just all crew and driving the semi because I had my Class A's. And that's kind of how I got my feet wet until I went to Red Bluff and went to work for Jimmy. And then that's where I really learned everything.
So you talk about being an on-the-spot crew guy. You know, what would you say was the hardest thing you learned with monster trucks? Getting to learn.
Anything to do with the motors, you know, running the valves, you got to run them in a certain order, and you got to turn the motor in a certain way. You can't run them backwards, which I'm not going to say any names, but we found out the hard way when we ran it backwards. That and probably transmissions is one of the hardest things to learn on monster trucks, besides wiring. I mean, I get confused when I'm trying to plug in a USB cord and it doesn't work, but definitely motors and trannies.
So working with Craig, you know, did you ever have a chance to get behind the wheel, or, you know, what were you mainly doing with Craig?
When I was with Craig, it was mainly just crewing. He did put me in the trucks and move them around, stuff like that. This is how bad my memory is. I actually was subbed out as a driver while working for Craig for Jimmy Creighton when he had the Barefoot and Monster Patrol trucks. And they needed a driver in Colorado. I had never jumped a truck in my life. And off to Colorado I went. And I met up out there with Gino Keinel. He was in Monster Patrol, and I was in Barefoot. And basically, my training was get in the truck, go down there, turn, and come back. And this is before the show. So I jumped in the truck, fired it up, drove it, turned it, parked it. And that was my training. And the ironic thing about that show, it was Greeley, Colorado, is I went out, we did a wheelie contest. I was scared to death, you know, so I don't even think the wheels got much off the ground. And then it came freestyle time. Well, went out there and just let her fly. And little did I know, all four corners, the shocks were blown out, and I broke my back. My very first show had a compression fracture, broke my back. Knocked the wind out of me. I didn't know what was going on. Scared to death. I could still move my hands and feet, which, you know, was obviously a good thing. But the memory that I do have about my very first show was that I broke my back. And still raced another, I think, 3 or 4 weekends after that in that truck. After we figured out the shocks were blown out, we got them fixed. So it wasn't as bad. But I don't know if you've ever had a compression fracture, but it's not the most comfortable feeling in the world. And, you know, jumping a truck and your spine in the old days, sitting in those beard seats, was a no brainer, but that's how bad I wanted to drive. And I didn't tell anybody, just kept doing it. And every time I jumped, it knocked the wind out of me. So that's my experience on, if you want to be a monster driver, that was it.
You really set the bar for yourself. Now's a good time. Make sure, if everybody that's listening right now, make sure you share this video, share it across social media. Make sure everybody can jump in here and hear Russell tell his story. Really starting to get rolling here. You mentioned your first experience, you break your back. You drive a couple more weeks, and then I would imagine you do eventually get out of the truck. And how long are you out healing up?
Well, typically that's a 6-month recovery, they say. So after I did my last show in the barefoot truck, I went back to Craig and crewed and started working for Jimmy after that. And that's within the 6-month recovery time. And then Jimmy did a show up in Klamath Falls, Oregon, and he wanted me to drive his truck. Well, him not knowing that I'm basically just recovered from a broken back, I was scared to death. And got in his truck, and it was Tom Mintz was at this show. Charlie Pockin was at this show in Gravedigger. And here I am, a newbie who really doesn't know anything. My first jump in Jimmy's truck, my foot got stuck in the Lexan that's right in front of the throttle pedal. My foot slid and hit and got stuck in there. So as I jump, the motor just hangs wide open as I'm in midair. I was able to get it pulled back out before the truck landed, but having that scare me, my back scare me, worried about what was going to happen with my back and trying to do a good job for Jimmy. I had a lot going on in my mind. Pulled it together, was not the greatest show. I saw a video of that, and I think I saw it once and I never wanted to see it again. That's how bad it was. But I definitely built off that I never wanted to do that bad in a show. I'm pretty sure I got booed that night. And I did not ever want to get booed again. So I made sure of that.
So talking about Jimmy Crete, you know, one of the hardest workers in the business, talk about some of your first experiences working with Jimmy.
If I could sum it up, boot camp. That guy. So when I got hired by Jimmy, 2 weeks later, he brought on Lindsey Wink. So we're basically hired right around the same time. And we're a lot younger then, and we had heard stories on Jimmy on how he was treating his crew guys and stuff like that, or anybody for that matter. And we were scared to death of the guy. And it was definitely fun and entertaining working for him. We worked some long hours. That was right around the November, December times where we're tearing trucks down to get ready for first quarter Monster Jam. And that year we took down Scarlet Bandit and Bounty Hunter to the bare frames to get them powder coated, rebuild shocks. He went with a new shock setup, which I think he does every weekend. And that was not fun. I don't know if you've ever tore down shocks, but that shocks is one of the worst. I'd rather change a tranny out than work on a shock. And Lindsey and I got one-on-one lessons in shock proper setup. But it was a lot of work working for Jimmy. But the one thing that I can honestly say is Jimmy has the patience to teach somebody the right way. No matter how long it takes you to do it, he will show you the right way to do it and does not mind questions. And that's what somebody new to the sport like myself, I needed to ask questions. And he encouraged that. And since then, I have a couple pull trucks myself. I've kind of converted that maintenance program of what Jimmy taught us back then into my team. And it's definitely paid off because, knock on wood, to this day, we've never broken a single part.
And it's such a great mentality when you're learning from, you know, a guy like Jimmy Crete. And it's just, you know, the way his equipment always works, he's like a really much a MacGyver in so many situations. And, you know, working alongside Jimmy, I know there's been a lot of people have gone through the team over the years. And, you know, you mentioned you're there with Lindsey Wink. What was it like working with Lindsey Wink right there when, you know, that was a big shift for him coming over from Jurassic Attack into a bigger name team, you know, let's put it out there. You know, what was it like working alongside eventually one of the bigger stars in the industry?
So when I first met Lindsey, we were actually at Firebird Raceway there in Phoenix. And he had just flown in for the weekend. I think he was doing a show with Don out in Pomona. And he flew in for the weekend. And one of the first things he walks up and says to me is, "It sure is going to be nice having a crew guy." And I kind of took that wrong. I was like, "Who's this guy think he is? Is he a superstar or what?" And really didn't have much interaction that weekend with him. And then when he finally came on board, I think it was right around November, we became best friends and almost to the point of brothers. He lived with me for a short while when he was when he first started driving Blue Thunder. His then wife Debbie came on the road with us. We were just a tiny little family in a Volvo semi running down the road, but we definitely hit it off, and we made some real hard times fun, just to pass the time. So he's definitely a friend of mine.
Yeah, and it's so incredible. I think, you know, when I look at it, your guys' careers really run parallel, but you know, you guys went a lot of different avenues. You know, Lindsey was more so full-time, but you were never really full-time driving. You know, how come that was always a decision? Like, we would see you for a couple events and then we wouldn't see you for a couple more events. You know, how are you able to make that balance where you were never really 100% full-time?
So I was full-time with Jimmy for all of 2005. And then in around 2006, I actually moved from Utah back to, well, put it this way, I moved my belongings back to California. And I didn't think I wanted to be involved in monster trucks anymore because I didn't want to be the crew guy. It's fun for so long, and then it just kind of takes a toll on you constantly fixing everybody's brakes. And so I thought I was going to step away from it. Well, I did for about, I don't know, a month and a half, and they were in Reno, which is about 4 hours from where I'm at, and they called and they needed a crew guy. So I jammed up there, and next thing I know, I'm back to work, working for Jimmy, and we'd had a talk because I told him I wanted to drive, and the agreement was made with him and Lindsey before I even came on board. They had been talking about this for a while, that he was going to be the driver of the Iron Outlaw truck. And had that not taken place, that I would have had a chance to be the Iron Outlaw driver. But since that had already happened, Lindsey was, which I understood. And he said, after first quarter, I'll put you in the truck and we'll get some driving and all that. So, you know, I kept my hopes up. And sure enough, the weekend after Jimmy won the 2005 Freestyle Championship, Lindsey and I went and did an indoor show down at College Station, Texas, at Texas A&M University. And that was my first time, which was kind of an honor to me because I was driving the champion freestyle truck, big name truck, Bounty Hunter. And it was my first time in my mind of driving a monster truck and doing well. We had a really good time. Lindsey and I both did very well. And Lindsey taught me along the way on how to drive, how to hit stuff momentum wise. So Lindsey was a good teacher for me.
Go ahead, Vincent. You have a question?
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, the freestyle champion truck, Bounty Hunter, Jimmy Creighton. Let's talk about that truck. How did that truck handle compared to your previous trucks you've driven?
If I had to choose any truck to drive, it would be Jimmy's. One, because he's real particular on his shock setup. And coming from having a broken back, that's what I wanted. And plus, who doesn't want to drive Bounty Hunter, a world champion truck? I mean, everybody knows that name. It's a reigning world champion. That truck then compared to now was really no comparison because everything has advanced so much. But back then in 2005, that was one of the, actually all his trucks was the top team anywhere. He had the biggest horsepower. He had the best looking trucks. I mean, if he had a crack on the body, we were fiberglassing it back together with paint, making it look like it was brand new. There wasn't a drop of oil on those trucks. So driving something of that caliber was a big feat for me, and I was real proud to do that.
Yeah, and you know, it's such an accomplishment. Again, it's a world champion team at that time, and you're on the team, but it's just always so interesting, like, you know, being the guy that watched on TV. You see a lot of the Jimmy and Don and Lindsay, and then Russell's here too. At that time, Jimmy was not really running a fourth truck. So did you ever feel, overshadowed by the other team because they were on TV a lot more frequent and really building up the name? Did you ever feel that kind of pressure whenever you got in the truck?
You know, a lot of guys get into this sport, or any sport, I should say, for that matter, and they want to be a household name. They want to be on TV. They want their name on the side of the truck so people know who you are. I didn't care about any of that. I never felt like I was the underdog or that nobody knew who I was. I didn't care. Still to this day, even though I've made some fans across the country, being a household name never really was a big deal to me. So those guys, I knew their roles and I knew my role. And I really didn't want to be an every weekend driver. Funny to say that because I've been in the sport for so long. Maybe that's why I've been doing it for so long. I was fine doing 2-3 months in a row and then taking 6 months off and then come back and fill in for somebody that needed some time off or something like that. I was totally okay with that. And I think that's what helped me work so long for Jimmy was I didn't have to deal with him every weekend like some of these poor guys did. I just prefer to do it that way. And actually, to this day, I still prefer to do that. I've actually given up my seat before in a show. Actually, the one where you were at, Phil, in Oakland, gave up my seat for somebody else to drive. So it just wasn't a big deal to me.
Yeah, and that really speaks to the character you are and the individual you are, in the business where you have that mindset. That's really hard to come by. And I'd imagine that's why still Jimmy always gives you a call, you know, when in doubt, let's see what Russell's doing. What's your relationship like with Jimmy Green? Even today, I mean, I imagine your phone still rings and he tries to get you to get back in the truck.
Yeah. Jimmy and I, we talk here and there. It's mostly making fun of each other, text messages, just kind of seeing how each other's doing, touching base. Matter of fact, Jimmy made the wrap for my pull truck and helped me design. Well, Sinjin, who does most of his work, helped me design the truck. And he was a sponsor of the wrap. And we just kind of stay in contact. You know, him and Don flew out in October for my wedding. And so we're really good friends. I call him when I have questions on my pull truck that can relate to what he knows and what he can help me with. And he's even sent me parts. So I bought parts off of him to help out my team here. And it's two separate sports, really.
Yeah, we're definitely going to dig into a lot of the pulling truck in a little bit. So make sure you guys stay tuned for that. And again, if you're listening live, make sure you share this video right now. Make sure everybody can jump in and hear Russell share his story. Make sure you like this video as well. That helps the podcast keep growing and growing. And want more people, definitely tune in and listen and hear Russell Steele tell his story. Now, Russell, you are a veteran driver. I know you had a lot of key driving opportunities and big moments in the truck. I had a message from one of my buddies, Andrew. Do you remember running at a show in Joliet, Illinois, and you made it to the final round against Jimmy Green?
There's some shows that I remember and some shows I don't remember. I don't remember that one. Jimmy and I made it to a lot of finals together. And nine times out of 10, he would beat me because he definitely Jimmy wants to win at all costs. And when you're the second truck on a team, especially to that guy, you kind of back her down a little bit. But the one thing that Jimmy always taught us and told us was no matter what, when you're racing, you always go for the win. And so when you're racing Jimmy, you always think he's going to break. And then if you break, then he's going to be mad at you because you broke and he's broke. And then you got two broke trucks that you're trying to fix to get back for freestyle or the next round of racing. So you kind of back her down a little bit. But there's also been times that I'm just kind of thinking to myself, you know, screw this guy. I'm going for the win and gone out and beat him. And he, as much as he says he doesn't care who wins as long as one of his trucks win, he doesn't like it. And still to this day, I rub it in. I definitely rub it in and let him know who beat him and when and where.
And I know you've also had a lot of, a handful of events competing in Montreal a number of times over the years. You know, that's a ways away from the West Coast. You know, what are some of your memories from running in Montreal?
So that's probably one of my most favorite places to race. That floor is so big. It's probably twice the size of a normal stadium size of, show. And it's so spread out that you can carry a lot of momentum between jumps and obstacles and all that. And with the dome, it echoes in there. And believe it or not, you can hear the echoing in your helmet while you're in the truck. You can definitely carry some momentum and some jumps. I know you had some on that video there. And I just really liked going there. Yes, it was a long ways from home. And it's on the side of Canada where they don't speak the language we're speaking, so it's a little tough. You just point at pictures when you go to a restaurant of what you want to eat. But I mean, if he was to call and say, hey, let's, I need you to go to Montreal, I would definitely be on board.
It's always one of the more unique events, and hopefully they can get that rolling again pretty soon. You know, we mostly associate you with driving for Jimmy Crean, but there have been a couple of times in your career where you have driven for other teams. I'm going to name them off because I have them written down, of course. You had a one-off driving Spider-Man for Team KCM. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was in Sublimity, Oregon. They had me it was a show for the sponsors only night, so there was really no crowd. So he needed I think somebody wasn't there. One of his drivers didn't make it or something like that, and he needed somebody. So threw me in that one, and I made a couple jumps in it. Nothing major, nothing to brag about, but I guess I can add that to my list of trucks.
It's on the list. It counts. I know another truck that you had a lot of runs with was also a Jurassic Attack. We've had a lot of Jurassic Attack guys on here lately. Jurassic Attack and Maniac. What were your experiences driving for Don Frankish?
So Don Frankish is a cool guy. Him and I, we still talk every once in a while. He needed a driver down in somewhere down in Southern California and got a hold of me, and I went and helped him out. And it was in the Jurassic truck. And, you know, that's a shorter wheelbase truck. And, you know, you can wheelie off a dirt clod in that truck. That was a fun truck to drive. Of course, another truck that I was afraid to roll it because the body was so expensive, you know, with the dinosaur 3D look. So I drove a few times in that truck. Probably three or four weekends in that truck. And then he did a show in Chico, California, and he was going to drive Jurassic and he wanted me to drive his. So never drove his truck before. Didn't know anything about it. He just said, just go out there, treat it like any other truck and just have fun. Well, this was kind of towards the end of Don owning both trucks, both race trucks. So I go out there and I come up the backside of the racetrack and jump turn two, which is a pretty steep incline, jump turn two coming into the stadium. Well, when I did that, his motor decided it didn't want to stay together anymore. So a big ball of fire. I saw the glow in the Lexan and I thought, yep, this isn't good. Sure enough, blew it up. My night was done. So I had basically a handful of jumps in Maniac and was done for the night. So I didn't get too much time in Maniac, but again, there's another truck to add to the list.
And then another curious truck is the Black Knight. What do you recall driving the Black Knight?
I don't even know the year of that. That might have been somewhere around 2012, 2013, something like that. I was coordinating shows for Monster X, and we had done a show, I think it was in Medford, and the driver of Black Knight had hurt his back. So the owner, I had met him, I had done a couple shows with the owner, Todd, and he asked me if I would drive the next weekend in Redmond, Oregon. And I, you know, I, obviously I had to make sure I could get somebody to cover my spot with Monster X so I can go drive that truck. Well, it worked out. So I got to drive that truck, and that's a completely different setup from anything I've ever even sat in. He's got the coilover shocks. So no sway bars, no nothing like that. And no practice time, no anything. So when I went out driving that truck, when you go around a corner, you feel like you're completely laying on your side already, and you're not. So my driving style changed a little bit because, of course, every time I turned, I thought, I'm going to flip this thing. Well, that was racing, so I didn't do too good in racing. And then I came back in freestyle, and Todd told me, show me what this truck can do. Because it was his first year of owning the truck and running it. It's actually the old Gunslinger truck. So I hopped in it and went out. And I don't know if you've, I'm sure you've seen the video. I make a jump. It lands kind of funky and immediately goes right to the sidewalls. And only thing I know is I've got Dan Runte and Bigfoot sitting right directly in front of me. And I don't have much room to try to save this thing. So I just jerked the wheel to the left and she came right back. Made it look like I knew what I was doing, and put in reverse, went back and made a couple more jumps, and that was my night driving the Black Knight.
I'm going to go to some fan questions now. You know, we're just talking about all the different trucks you've had a part in. Question comes in from Levi Shones. He says, what were some of the trucks you were supposed to / wanted to drive? Is there anything that sticks out?
So there was a deal that was pretty much hammered out until the last night. I was due to fly down to where was that at? Puerto Rico or somewhere like that. And I was supposed to drive Bigfoot. Everything had gone through, they had okayed it. And something happened, something shady with the promoter down there that didn't work out, and I didn't get to do it. But I was pretty pumped that Bigfoot had wanted me and chose me to want to go down and represent Team Bigfoot down in Puerto Rico. And plus, I was looking forward to going to Puerto Rico because I'd never been there, and then drive the truck Bigfoot, you know, the first truck that ever started this whole crazy sport. But it didn't pan out, and didn't get to happen. So, but some of the trucks that I probably would like to drive, I mean, who doesn't want to drive a grave digger because you get the green light and go out and just tear that thing up. But I think one of the cool trucks that I've always liked and never got a chance to drive was Blacksmith. I like that body style. I like the way that truck handled. That's probably one of the trucks. If I was to ever build a truck, it would probably be a replica of Blacksmith.
That would be awesome to see. That's for sure. As we have another fan question here from Travis Palm, this is a good one. And he wants to know, what was your reaction seeing Jimmy Creighton win the racing championship in 2019?
So I had crewed for Jimmy quite a few times. Usually whenever he went to Vegas, even if I wasn't fully working for him that year, I would go down and crew for him and help him out with, usually it was, they had the three trucks in or just the two trucks. And he had made it to the finals so many times and never capitalized on it. And finally in 2019, when he won it, I didn't get to watch it live. I wasn't there because I had changed it to Florida. But after seeing everything on the internet and all that, first thing I did was I sent him a message and told him congratulations that finally the old man had done it. And it's something good for him. He's not going to stop trying to win it. We all know how Jimmy is. He's a win at all costs kind of guy. And I think he's got a couple more left in him. Sad part is I wished he would have won all these that he made it to, because he'd probably be a 5-6 time champion in racing, and you know, you don't get anything for second place. So I was pretty thrilled to see him take that.
It's such a strong victory. We were there live, so we definitely felt the same emotion. You know, looking through your career, I know a lot of you've really competed all over. North America. But I know you always stayed true and true to WGAS Motorsports. You always seem to pop up at a lot of those events and driving whether Iron Outlaw or Bounty Hunter or whatever body Jimmy had going on. What's your relationship like with John Borba and the whole WGAS crew?
So I first started doing shows for John years ago. Usually it was Darren Miguez's first year driving. Jimmy wasn't there. And I really didn't know John too well and just basically kind of went and did the show and left and got out and went on to the next one. But then doing all the shows, since John is West Coast, he lives 2 hours from me. Him and I built a relationship that we text quite often now. I just went over and did a 10-day drive-through parade display with our pull truck. John and I, we kind of butted heads one time up in Auburn. Some things didn't go too well up there, and I had told Jimmy I don't want to do any shows for that guy. And now, pretty much, John's the only guy I want to do shows for. He's a very cool guy. He's very, very understanding. He's a family guy, which I'm a big family guy. We're actually, I guess you could say, somewhat family. My sister married his nephew. And so I call him Uncle JB when I text him. And John WGAS Chelsea that helps him out. They're just a class act. They know how to put on a show. Safety is a big thing for myself. And they're huge on safety, which we all know you have to be with monster trucks. And there have been times at some of John's shows, if Jimmy's not there and I'm in Outlaw or if I'm in Bounty, he'll put me last. And because he knows that I was able to go out and close up a show and do a good job. Or he would put me first. And whenever he would do that, he would come over and he'd say, hey bud, there's nothing against you. He goes, I just need you to go out and set the bar high so that everybody else will do just as good. And which I didn't mind. I would rather go first. Everybody wants to go first because you get fresh cars and you pop it up higher. They're softer. And then you get to go back and chill and watch everybody else. But yeah, WGAS, that's class act.
Talking about good old JB and WGAS, did you ever get the chance to compete at Del Mar? You know, it's a historic venue. And what was it like competing there? So
Del Mar is a, for a monster truck team, is a marathon. It's 4 or 5 days of 2 shows a day. And they're quick shows, which is the good thing. But it's a lot of work. Usually either I broke or Jimmy would break or I would roll or Jimmy would roll. So we were always working. I always look forward to going to Del Mar. One, you're right next to the ocean. The stadium is really cool. It's kind of like an indoor, yet it's outdoor. I really like doing that show, but that show always turned into a ton of work for us. One, because John decided he was going to have Monster X Games and do a high jump and a long jump and a wheelie and donuts and all this other kind of stuff. And I remember I had the that's when we went with a all red Outlaw body. And this guy made the body for Jimmy, and I jumped in the high jump. I had a broken rear left axle, which we didn't know. So when I jumped, it kicked me sideways, landed on the side, blew the whole rear end of the truck out, and the body shattered into about 100 pieces. So that night, not only were we doing body work, but we're trying to fix my truck. Jimmy went out, wrecked his truck. So we got 2 trucks wrecked. I think we went to bed about 4 a.m. and we were back at the track at 7 because we had an 11 o'clock show. So Del Mar is bittersweet because it was fun to go there, but it was always a nightmare working on those trucks there.
I know another important venue for you is always been Turlock. It's always been kind of the home game for you. That always seems to where you pop up. What are some of your favorite memories from competing in Turlock?
So Turlock, I grew up going to tractor pulls, most of them put on by John Borba. And that's where I saw my very first ever monster truck, and it was the Cardiff Giant. So Turlock kind of holds a special spot in my heart. Just one, not because it's local, but that's where I saw my first ever monster truck. And finally, when time came, I mean, I drove monsters for quite some time before I was even able to come to California and do a show. And then Turlock popped up, and I got to come out, and I got to compete and drive. I'd always told my mom when I was a little kid that one day I would be out there. And I'm sure, you know, she laughed in her head probably and said, yeah, whatever. Well, that day came, and I got to fulfill that dream of mine of performing in front of my family and all my friends in Turlock. And I did quite a few shows there, and I did very well. In Turlock, one, it's a hometown, so you always drive a little harder in your hometown shows. But that was also the place that my mom was able to see me drive last before my mom passed. And I have a picture up here on my wall of my mom sitting in the front row and me jumping a bus. And so that Turlock holds a special spot in my heart.
Yeah, I was just about to bring up your mom. Your mom was very much a big part of all sorts of the events out there for WGS, especially wherever you were competing. And I know, you know, Green Trucks ran Memorial Decal for the longest time. You know, how much did your mom really enjoy seeing you compete in the truck?
So everybody always says that my mom's my biggest fan. You know, you hear that quite often. Well, truly, my mom was my biggest fan. No matter if I was out here in California running or if I was on East Coast somewhere running, she would blow up her Facebook, putting stuff. She would wait up for my phone call to find out how I did that night. My mom was a huge monster truck fan. And one of the things that I always did that I really didn't even – it didn't bother me to do donuts in a monster truck. My biggest thing was slap wheelies. But my mom loved monster truck donuts. One, because the motors are revved up so high and you're spinning in circles as fast as you can and you're throwing dirt everywhere. So my mom loved it. So whenever my mom was at the shows, I would make sure that I went out and ripped a good set of donuts for my mom. And after my mom passed, I didn't do too many shows after that. It kind of took the wind out of my sail to compete anymore. Anymore, I go out and I always do donuts for my mom.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned, you know, based on the timeline, how many more times you got in the truck. I remember that Turtlelock event, back, I think in May 2016, that was billed as your last time driving a truck. What do you remember from that weekend, really, where it was promoted? That was the Russell Steele curtain call.
That weekend, that was it was a tough weekend. But it's so I guess you could sum it up by saying, no matter what, whenever you get in a truck and you put a helmet on, you kind of forget everything. You're focusing on safety, and you're focusing on going out and doing a good job. That's probably the funnest part to me is when you actually get in the truck and you put a helmet on. And for that weekend, it was a special weekend.
Very much a special weekend. I know it was a great tribute. It was really, again, that weekend in Turlock. It's, you know, really the home game for everyone. And no special weekend, but of course, as you mentioned, you know, to pivot a little bit, you're never quite out of the sport. And you had a couple more events the next year in 2017. They're pretty big events. I know we have a John Scott Sherrill in the comments. He's talking about Puyallup, Washington. I know one of those events in that stint was a Puyallup. So what were your experiences over the years competing up there?
So Puyallup was a really cool place. John had done that show quite often, and I never had the chance to go up and do that show. Jimmy either had somebody else in the truck. And I finally got the opportunity. And one, I wanted to do that show because it was done on asphalt. There's no dirt, nothing like that. So it was all at the actual arena. And I'm thinking, there's no way they think we're going to go out here and race monster trucks in this tiny little arena. But sure enough, we go out there and it's roundy round racing, Chicago style. And he's got K rails up against the cars. And basically it was a van stack and a set of cars for racing. And Puyallup, the way the stadium is, it's kind of hard to describe. You can fit quite a few people there. Once the people get in there, it fills up. And it was just a really cool place to do a show. One, you're kind of up on a hill. Everything's greener than green up there. And to go out and race on that because you're sliding everywhere on the asphalt. That was that's a fun place to go. I think I've done two or three for John up there. And John, if you do those shows again, man, you need to get me back in there, man. I would definitely go back and do a show there.
And then immediately the next day after that Pial event, you and Jimmy get the trailer. You go flying down to Santa Clara, and you drive Knucklehead at Monster Jam, big TV event. You're the first person to drive Knucklehead at Monster Jam. What do you remember about the crazy 24 hours? All of a sudden, now you're in Levi's Stadium for Monster Jam.
So that weekend, I think I got a call on a Thursday because it's a Saturday show. I get a call on a Thursday, and Jimmy asking me, "Hey, I need somebody over in Levi's Stadium to drive for Saturday night for Monster Jam." I said, "Okay, when do you need me there?" I mean, he knew I was going to do it because whenever he calls, I'm pretty much going to bail him out and help him. And he said, "We're going to be there late." He said, "We're going to be there about the time people are getting in the stands." He said, "We're going to have to throw tires on. We're going to have to fix whatever we break from Piala, and we're going to have to get going." Well, I'm there, and I got my crew chief, Scott. He's there with me. And here comes the trucks. It's Terry Woodcock. He's helping Jimmy drive from Washington and Jimmy. And we get there. And to my surprise, every crew guy from Monster Jam was there waiting. And we had those trucks out of the trailers, shocks done, tired up, in 30 minutes, ready to go. I've never seen anything like that. A lot of people don't get to see that behind the scenes kind of stuff. And when I saw that, I was just like, wow, this is amazing. Jimmy told me, he said, "Hey, just get your fire suit on, just get ready." And the thing about that show is I was in the CRD bounty. It's actually was the Bounty Hunter, but they had the Knucklehead on there. And I had never driven that truck. And that truck's a lot different than the other Patrick chassis trucks. And didn't do the greatest. I think you can see in the video, I went out and busted the front tire rod in freestyle. Did a decent job, I think, for my first Knucklehead debut. But to debut that truck for what it stands for and who's behind it and all that was pretty cool. Well, I guess you could say to debut any truck for Monster Jam is a pretty cool deal to add to your resume. But I did get to debut that truck with the 3D body that you have in the video there in Montreal. And that was a lot of fun getting to do that because that was the main body of the whole Knucklehead monster truck. And to get to debut that truck up there was pretty sweet as well.
Yeah, that was exactly where I was going to pivot to. It's crazy look at, you know, you such associate Knucklehead with obviously Zoltan and everybody from Five Finger Death Punch. But when you look at all the statistics, it's Russell Steele's at the top of the list for all of Knucklehead's major accolades. I always found that so interesting. But then you switch over back to Iron Outlaw. And for at the time of this recording, your last event, it was in Tucson. That was actually the last time I saw you run, obviously. What do you remember from that last weekend? It's been so long now, 3 years or 4 years or so, but what do you remember?
So I do remember going down there, and I had Austin Mitten with me, and he was new to driving. He was in Outlaw. I believe he was in Outlaw. I don't know. You're probably better to tell me what truck I was in. I don't even remember.
Come on, Phil.
I have you written down for Outlaw, so I'm going to go with my gut.
Okay. Yeah, check those notes.
Okay. And so I was trying to help train the guy, a new guy. And also that was on a racetrack, so you're doing asphalt there. And that show was pretty laid back. I had suffered – the weekend before that was Levi's Stadium and kind of suffered a minor concussion. Well, I say minor. It was a little bit more than that. So I was kind of taking it easy down there in Tucson because the headaches and whatnot from hitting the back of the seat on that big jump you saw where I broke. My head had hit the back of the seat. Didn't feel too good. But trying to train Austin and tell him, you know, how to show him how to do wheelies and you know, when to hit the throttle, when not to hit the throttle. So it was kind of cool because I remember going back to the day when I was getting taught, you know, throttle control and being the new guy and then helping out and teaching Austin and then seeing what Austin's done now is, I mean, the guy's amazing besides landing on top of Don's truck. He's done a lot of amazing stuff. So I always let him know that, hey, man, I was your teacher. You're only good because of me.
See, that cracks me up, because that weekend I was down there with you guys and you had me run your RII. I remember you had me shut off Austin because he thought his donut was going just a little bit too long, because, you know, donuts, they can run hard on the truck. And I remember that was like a teaching lesson for Austin. That was only like his third weekend driving. So that always cracks me up looking back at it now, and having worked with Austin for so many years now too. But I've seen, you know, you've seen so many people come and go from Two Extreme Racing, and you really have been through all of them, even like the one-off drivers. So who are some of the drivers that stand out to you that have gone on to drive for other teams or just really impressed you while with Two Extreme Racing?
I was there when Darren came on board, and he's obviously he's got his own team now, and he's come a long way, because Darren was just the fan. He brought his son by the shop just to check out the trucks. He didn't know anything about them, and became friends with Jimmy and started hanging around the shop quite a bit, and then ended up getting a driving job, basically driving the semi, just like I did, and then turned into a fill-in driver, learning a bit more about the trucks, and then finally started driving the race trucks, and he did a really good job. Darren and I toured together up in Canada. We did quite a few shows up there, and now the guy's got his own trucks and running Monster Jam. He's doing great. He's done a really good job. Another one was the late Nick Owens. Nick and I, we did a lot of shows together. He was just a crazy redneck, man. Nothing scared that guy. And he had some talent. He could do stuff in a monster truck that I never thought a first year driver could do. And that was another one that I kind of helped groom along the way. And Nick was very charismatic, a little bit on the crazy wild side, and but knew once you got in the truck, he knew what his role was. And I knew if I was racing against Nick that I was going to have to step up my game a little bit, even though it was his first year in the sport. He just didn't have any fear, and he would just drive that truck the way it should be drove. And he got lucky, man. He would come on the verge of rolling that thing over, and he would somehow save that truck, pull it back up on all fours, get out laughing. So I would probably say Nick and Austin and Darren.
Got a comment here from Mike Minner from Warhead, and he says, do you have any Trent Montgomery stories?
I didn't run a bunch of shows with Trent. Trent came on kind of in about a year that I didn't do much driving for Jimmy. We did do a couple shows together. We transported trucks together. Trent had a lot of talent as well. I seen that guy get nose high up on top of a bus, getting ready to go over backwards and back that thing all the way back down, and did it in a matter of a half second. Trent had a lot of talent, and I don't even know what Trent's doing now. I don't know if he's still racing or not, but if he's not, it'd be kind of a shame, because he's got a lot of talent, and he can hang with the Anderson boys.
And now it's time of the segment of the podcast where it's time for Explain That Photo. So roll the footage. Starting off with our first photo, pretty simple. Explain that photo.
So this was you driving Iron Outlaw. This was that Tucson weekend. It should have been you. That's what I've written down.
I don't even see it.
Oh, you don't see pictures?
No, nope, I don't see it.
Uh-oh.
I'll take your word for it.
Well, to prevent any further embarrassment, can you leave the room and come back in and see if we can get you to pull up pictures?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So while Russell comes back in, this is him driving Iron Outlaw. Well, let me put that back up. That's okay.
There it is.
He claims he drove Knucklehead that weekend, but no, he drove Iron Outlaw because I helped readjust his Hans device. But yeah, that was a time of recording, his last time driving a truck. And have Russell come back in here and hopefully you can see the rest of the pictures. I found a lot of great pictures of Russell from over the years. So if you guys are enjoying tonight's podcast, make sure you do share this video and make sure everybody can jump in here and catch up with Russell's story. You know, everything will sit here for in our archives. So anytime, come back and re-listen to Russell's story at any time. Enjoy it forever and ever. So make sure you share this video. And as we continue on with Russell, and like I said, he's always been a stand-up guy, and it's been interesting to see how he has gone through every era of like two extreme racing. You know, Jimmy Crean has had so many different drivers and so many different layers of the operation. Russell's been there the whole time. So it's really incredible to get his perspective on a lot of that. Russell, can you hear me?
Yep, I got you.
All right. Can you see pictures?
Okay. Yeah. Now I got it.
All right. Cool. That's you driving. All that week, Dan.
Honestly, yes, sir. I'll be 100% honest with you. I don't even remember driving that body style or that wrap on that truck. Maybe this is the concussion talking. I don't know.
It's been a while. I told you we're all getting a little older.
Who knows?
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah,
we'll move on to the next photo.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Jekyll and Hyde. So there we did my sister was a teacher's aide at a school, and it was for special needs kids. And this was in Turlock, and we did this every year. We would put a truck on a semi, and my buddy donated a semi truck and re-rolled Jekyll and Hyde up there. And you can see Austin on the left and myself on the right and all the kids. And we took questions and fired the truck up. And it was something really cool to be a part of to get to do.
Got another photo for you.
Oh, boy. Well, you're going back in the day now. So that there, that's my second weekend ever driving a monster truck. And I've got a broken back sitting inside that truck right there. So you can imagine, I mean, that decent air right there, you can imagine what that felt like coming back down. That was in Meridian, Idaho in 2004.
Wow. So got another photo for you.
Okay, yeah, Chris Rock. So that's it, Octane Fest down in Fallon, Nevada. And that's a WGAS show. And I don't remember the name of the show that Chris Rock was doing, but it was something about rednecks. And he had to interview a bunch of rednecks and ask them questions and hear their responses. And fortunate for me, I got to meet him and get some pictures and shake his hand. And very nice guy, very funny guy. Never got to see the show, probably because I was on the road too damn much. But yeah, that was a John Borba's deal there. Oh, you're still going back. Holy cow. So this is in, where is this at? This is in Canada somewhere. Might be Toronto, Canada. Lindsay and I were doing a show up there for a Monster Spectacular, Chris Worrell. And I was on concrete, one of my first concrete shows. And I remember being told what to put on the tires for grip, and went out. We did a pretty good job. I think I might've went to the finals that weekend against Lindsay, and I think he might've got me. But Mike Vodders was there. It was a good show. We did a really good show. I remember seeing a picture somewhere on there that I was up on two wheels somewhere. So I must have been doing a pretty good job there. But yeah, that's the original outlaw body right there. This is your fault, man. So funny story with that. So it was this is about what 2 years ago up in at Sacramento. I had went down and went to the restroom because it was intermission time. And when I came back, my son-in-law, he goes, "Hey, man, they had your name up on the Jumbotron." And he's a jokester. And I was like, "Man, whatever, man." And he goes, "No, I'm serious." I said, "Dude, whatever." And I sit down, and as soon as I look up, I see you put it back on the screen. And I was like, "Holy cow, that was pretty cool of you to do that." I'm surprised you didn't have a camera on me or something, getting shoving popcorn in my mouth.
I didn't have that much pull back then. You got a free message.
Yeah, but that was pretty cool to do that, man. I appreciate you doing that. That was really cool.
All right, let's move on to the next photo.
Okay, that's the debut of Knucklehead in Montreal. So that's on the Scarlet Bandit chassis. So that's Dom's chassis. And funny story about that truck and doing that show is we had worked so hard getting that body put together, and getting it to fit on that chassis was harder, a lot harder than what people think. You don't just drill a hole and put a bolt in it. We had radios in our helmets so that Jimmy and I, we can talk to each other while we're sitting in the trucks. And before I went out and freestyled that truck, and mind you, this is on one of my favorite floors to do a freestyle on, he tells me, "Hey, Russ, go out there, do a good job, but just remember that's a $40,000 body." So I've got that stuck in my head, like, okay, how do you go out and do a good job with a $40,000 body on it? And it's the only one. And it took them probably 8 months to build it. So I kind of thought, well, I can just drive around and look dumb and just pop it up and down. But I thought, nah, that's not my style. And that's not a way to represent Knucklehead in a debut. So I went out and just let her eat, jump. You can see in that video, jumping the buses, jumping the dollar ride buses. And I mean, I had a fun time out there in that truck at that show. That was a lot of fun.
Definitely an awesome body.
Oh, yeah. So that's my boys. That's Justin on my right and Brandon on my left. And that's our pull truck. And we've called it the Bounty Hunter. And it's a modified pull truck. And you can see I'm in jeans, and my boy Brandon, my oldest, he's got the fire suit on. That was his first weekend driving that truck, and that was in 2019, Sublimity, Oregon, which is kind of bittersweet because I've done shows up there in monster trucks, and I've grew up around truck pulling, so I would do the monster trucks, and I'd get to watch truck pulling, so I kind of had the best of both worlds, and now I got to go up there and do both. And that weekend, we had a pretty big class in truck pulling. It was like 12 trucks. And my boy went out first in the class and went out and took first place. And it was kind of cool to see a truck that I built with my oldest son driving it and not only doing good, but winning. And now, well, let's just put it this way. Now we got a second truck, so, and it's going to be his. And then maybe we'll get Justin to start driving my truck, and I'll just watch my boys go out and have some fun.
We got one more photo for you.
Monroe, Washington. So that's 2007. That was the weekend after Lindsay had finished working for Two Extreme and moved on to Blue Thunder. Jimmy and I went up and did the Monroe County Fair or whatever it is. Clark County Fair, I don't know what it's called up there. But Jimmy and I had made it to the finals in racing together. And we went out and he got me in racing. That's why you see his big smile. And the cool thing about that picture there is there was a lady there that made a cartoon coloring book. And she made that one of the pages in the book. I never got one, but I did get to see what it looked like. But yeah, I never thought I'd be a cartoon in a coloring book. But yeah, that photo right there made it.
Then I'll wrap up the segment. We also have a question here from the late, great Dallas Glenn Rogers, one of our past guests.
Late great. He's still alive.
Oh, Dallas. He's still kicking, huh?
Oh, I'm just messing. Thanks, Phil. Well, Dallas says, so was that the second time you drove Scarlet Bandit in Montreal?
I had drove Scarlet Bandit quite a few times, actually. Probably more times than not. But yeah, no, actually that would be the first time I drove Scarlet, because the other times I was in Outlaw. But yeah, I got you, Glenn. I'll get you.
he does redeem himself. He says that show in Monroe was the first time I saw you drive.
Oh, I didn't even know Dallas was there. I'll be darned.
Small. Yeah, place. He was probably about yay big, so you would have missed him.
He's gone now. So
yeah, boy, I think Dallas has actually announced one of the shows I was at, actually, that I was racing at. That's how, and to speak about Dallas, to see where he came from, being a fan, and now he's owns his own truck is really cool, and it's a nice-looking piece, too. Good job on that, Dallas.
Always loved Dallas Rogers, whether he's dead or alive. But, hey, actually, we were just talking about Scarlet Bandit. Have you ever ran an event with a Scarlet Bandit body? I don't have that on my list.
Nope. Thankfully, no, because I was told if I ever did that, I was going to have to get some cantaloupes and put in my shirt to be able to drive it. So luckily that never happened. Moved it around quite a bit, which is very tough to do because Don's about 5 foot tall and I'm almost 6 foot tall. And to get in that thing, it's like you're getting in a mini monster trying to move it around. So never did a show in Scarlet.
Just making sure. But, looking at that list of trucks you have driven, especially for Jimmy Crean, what has been your favorite identity to represent?
My favorite one would probably be Outlaw, because I was a part of assembling that truck when it first debuted and came out with Lindsay driving it. The actual ironic thing about that truck was when it first came out that first year, which was 2005, Lindsay and I did a lot of shows and Jimmy took some time off. He actually put Lindsay in Bounty and I did more of the driving in Outlaw. So in a sense, it was kind of, I was debuting Outlaw for the longest time. And then we got to talking to where that was kind of Lindsay's identity. So we swapped trucks and Jimmy was fine with it. So then I took over Bounty and then he took over Outlaw. But I would say probably Outlaw. I mean, it's enough that I have a tattoo on my arm of Outlaw. So, yeah, it's a little bit dear to my heart.
Dedication. I love it. And you're always dedicated to whatever you work on. And I know since you've stepped out of the monster truck, you have had a couple different projects. We've talked about it quite a bit. It's your polling truck. We had a question earlier from Lee Plato with the Skull Crusher truck. He says, what made you want to build a pull truck and not a monster truck?
I didn't have the desire to own my own monster truck, to be honest with you. I grew up around truck pulling. I don't know, the time was right. I think it was more of when I got out of monster trucks, I still had the itch to do something with horsepower. And that came along. And this truck was available and it was sitting out in a field with weeds growing through it. And the price was right. So I picked it up and took me a while to build it, and I finally got it to where it's definitely a top competitor out here on the West Coast. And in a monster truck, you really don't get to hold your foot down on the throttle at 8,000 RPMs for very long, if not ever. I don't think I've ever done it, unless you're doing a donut, and usually you don't hold it wide open. But in truck pulling, you get to hold it wide open for 10-15 seconds going down the track, and just hearing that thing wind up at 7,000-8,000 RPMs is a lot of people don't understand it, I guess, unless you're in the seat doing it. But it's something else to get in the seat and just mat the throttle and just hold on and point it straight. But truck pulling is it's affordable. I guess that's why, Lee, that I chose to do truck pulling over monster trucks is it's affordable. I don't have a shop. I don't have the luxury of parking a semi somewhere. So I got my pull truck parked right over here on the side of the house. It's under the awning, and I don't have to tire up and tire down. So I would say that's why. Probably the more affordable for me. But now we got we bought a second truck, and in the process of building the motor and the tranny for that truck, that one will be coming out here later this year. So maybe I do got to get a shop. I don't know. Maybe a ride truck, Lee. What do you think?
Well, Phil, I think we got a comment here. You want to read it for us?
Yeah, it's for Brandon Steele. He says, he kind of answered, but that second truck, when it's going to be finished, your son's coming for you. He wants to win in that truck.
So that's the problem is I think – so he's going to get my old motor that came out of that truck, and I actually like that motor better than the one I got. So I don't know. You just – you have to wait and see, little boy. Just wait until Dad goes out there and kicks your butt.
The gauntlet's been put down.
I'll risk blowing my truck up just to beat you.
We need video of that when that happens. Another comment just came in from Shannon Asbell. Wants you to come back up Oregon again for Brandon too, so I can watch you guys win. Got a lot of support up there in Oregon.
Yep, we love coming up to Oregon. That is our favorite place to pull. The competition up there is tough. There's a lot of trucks up there. Matter of fact, if they open up this year, that's already on our calendar that we're going to hit a couple places there in Oregon. So, yep, Shannon, you can come hang out with us. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, from an outsider's perspective, I mean, we can definitely see the differences. But what's the biggest difference, you know, when you're in the seat of a pulling truck compared to when you're in the seat of a monster truck?
So my truck, the way it's set up, I have the same Kirby seat that, you know, Jimmy's got in the monster trucks. I got the same seat belts. It's a center seat truck. It's basically the cockpit minus the roll bars and all that kind of stuff. It's set up the same as a monster truck. Only difference is you got a big motor sticking up in the front of you to where the monster trucks, you got it sitting behind you. So noise wise, it's the exact same noise, which that's what feeds me, is that loud thunder coming out of the pipes. Every once in a while I go out here and fire mine up and make my neighbors mad just so I can get my dose of smell and race gas and hearing that thunder in the pipes, because we haven't done anything with this whole pandemic going on. So I go out here and play like a little kid, I guess.
Another comment just came in from Scott Steele. He says, you guys looking for an extra crew member?
I can't afford you, Scott. You're too expensive, man. You're out of my budget.
Well, I know you're pretty good. Cousin, yeah. You got to keep the family close, I guess, you know. That's out of my pay grade.
Yeah.
But you got a pretty strong side hustle. I know my buddy Brian Anger is asking about it. You know, your day-to-day, you run SunCal Embroidery. What made you want to get in that business? It seems to be going pretty well.
So my full-time job out here in California was I was driving a fuel truck. Delivering, I did a lot of race fuel down to Havasu, Tucson, Utah, Oregon. And I kind of wanted to get out of the long haul driving and started hauling fuel locally. And if anybody knows, California traffic isn't the funnest thing to be a part of. And I was just kind of burned out on all the truck driving I've done. I started driving at 20. And Art, I was always drawing monster trucks and pull cars and sprint cars and stuff like that. And I just kind of started thinking, what can I do for artwork and to create it? And I started doing screen printing. That was the first thing I started doing. And my first order, funny you bring this up, my first order was Bounty Hunter and Scarlet Bandit shirts. And I went to a two-day school to learn how to do this. And basically, I just jumped right in the middle of the fire. A lot of people will start off with small orders. I started off with gigantic orders with lots of colors with Jimmy stuff. And I nailed it, and it came out good, looked good, and started to grow that business. Ended up selling my screen print and got into the embroidery, and that's taken off like wildfire. I do a lot of work for monster truck teams, a lot of pulling teams. I started out with nobody. You know, Jimmy was my first customer, and I think he just did it to help me out. And once people started seeing, you know, my work, it just kind of took off. I've got, I do stuff for Aftershock Monster Truck. We've done, let's put it this way. I got a hockey team in Boston. So I ship all over the U.S. I enjoy doing it because I'm putting artwork on a blank hat or jacket or shirt. So I enjoy what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing. You know, I don't have that attitude of coming to work and hating it and not wanting to be here. I like getting up and working and being my own boss and doing what I can.
Got a follow-up question here from Mike Menner from the Warhead Mini Monster. He says, I was wondering about that side hustle. Russell took over the WJAS merch tent, just about every merch-wise except underwear.
So, yeah, we did a drive-through parade here recently in Santa Rosa, and I took some of my merch that I had. I did some hats and I had some shirts and hoodies and all that kind of stuff, and straight killed it over there. I mean, we did amazing. And didn't, you know, to create a truck from between these 2 years and being able to put it on shirts and sell it just kind of like it was a monster truck or, you know, a NASCAR or something like that, and to do so well with the merch, I'm kind of proud of myself for being able to, one, make my own stuff, two, create a truck like that, and three, be able to sell it to people. And one day, hopefully, I see my stuff walking around Santa Rosa somewhere.
I know these mini monster dads are watching live. I have to ask the obligatory question. What are your thoughts on the mini monster trucks that have popped up for over the last couple of years?
So those are pretty neat. While I was over there in Santa Rosa, they have one with a small block blown motor in it. And when I was loading up my my truck that night to leave, they fired that thing up, and I thought it was a real one. Those things have come so far from basically a go-kart with big tires to full-blown RII systems in them, roll cages, blown motors in them now, four-wheel steering. It's to be honest, I wouldn't mind having that one with the blown motor in it for myself, just to play around in. So they've come a long ways, and before too long, you're going to see they're going to be doing just as much big-time jumps that the big boys are doing.
And you're talking what the big boys are doing. We got a question from Travis Palm. He wants to know, what do you think about the modern moves monster trucks are doing these days, such as bicycles, moonwalks, you name it? And if you got behind the wheel again, would you try them?
So what they're doing now in these monster trucks is I never, ever, ever thought they'd be doing this, and let alone doing it as well as they're doing. I mean, you get a truck and you bounce it on the nose and you walk it darn near all the way across the stadium and back it up and then do the same thing it's amazing what they're doing. I was never a fan of the backflips or anything like that. I had the opportunity to backflip. I chose not to. But these younger kids that are doing this, their reactions are so much better than my old butt. I'm probably going to try it one day, but it's probably not going to be on purpose. I'm probably going to do it on accident and make myself look really good doing it.
Well, hopefully you get to try it eventually, sooner rather than later, but last I checked, you're still retired. Does your phone still ring? People still looking for Russell Steely to get behind the wheel of a monster truck?
So funny you asked that, Phil. This week has been a week of just odd things happening. I did get a phone call this week and asking if I'd be interested in driving again, because most people know that I'm retired now. And of course, I'm always ready to get back in a truck. But my body, when I retired, was telling me, no, it's time to shut down. And since then, I changed the way that I live myself. I got really sick in 2019, and I've changed my diet, and I've lost some weight. My back feels good. I've been working out, so I feel really good, probably the best I've felt since my early 20s. So if there's any time to get back in a truck, I would do it now, because my body is not hurting like it used to. So to answer your question, yep, I do get phone calls. Some of them I've turned away. This one sounds like it might be a pretty good deal. Hopefully we can iron out all the small things and come to an agreement. And hopefully you guys will see me in a truck here before summertime.
So you heard it here, folks. Sounds like boy. Russell picked up the phone, and we might be seeing him sooner rather. We always say sooner rather than later. It really sounds like we're going to be seeing Russell sooner. And I hopefully that materializes and we can see you back in action. There's definitely got a lot more to prove, that's for sure. And that's got to be, gotta get you really excited. You know, you got to sit there and think, you know, what ifs, and you trying all these bicycles and everything. Has there ever been anything that you always wanted to accomplish in a truck, like specifically, that you never got the chance to do, that maybe opportunity comes up, you can do it, like competing at a special venue or doing a certain truck?
So one of my biggest things was, is I always wanted to drive in a show with the Gravedigger, of course, for Monster Jam. I got to do that one of my first times in Jimmy's truck, my first time ever in Bounty, but it wasn't a Monster Jam. It was an indoor, real small show, so you really couldn't do much. And it being my first time coming back from a broken back. But I did a show in Waco, Texas, down with Pablo Huffaker. And I finally got to do my Monster Jam show. It was back when they called it the Summer Heat. And it was hot. It was over 100 degrees that day down there. And I actually went out and I beat Pablo. I did a good job. I was in Outlaw and did a really good job in racing, beat Pablo in the finals. And we started off the show actually doing wheelies, and I won the wheelie contest. Then I went out and beat Pablo in Chicago style racing. And then in freestyle, that same event, went out and I tied him. So we had a tied freestyle score. And they took that to the fans for a fan vote. Well, of course, everybody's going to holler louder for a Gravedigger. So I didn't get a full sweep, but it was pretty bittersweet to beat a future Hall of Famer in Pablo and him being in Gravedigger.
A lot of great memories. If there's got to be one that stands out among the rest, what has been your favorite memory from your monster truck career thus far?
I would say when I did that show up in Montreal in Knucklehead, I beat out Jimmy, I beat out Mikey Vodders, and I beat out Jim Kohler, who were all freestyle champions. And that one there, one, being able to debut that big of a truck and for who it was for, and to go out and do so well and beat three, one reigning and two other former world champions was probably one of my favorite events that sticks out in my head a lot.
What you got, Vincent? Follow-up?
Yeah, I'd like to ask this question, and definitely interesting to hear your response. What advice do you have for someone looking to get in the monster truck industry?
Well, it kind of depends. There's two avenues on going about being a monster truck driver. One, you can work for a private team, or two, you can go and work for Monster Jam, which we call the company. So everybody wants to be a company driver because you get to fly in, fly out. You really don't work on the truck much versus going to a private team where you're doing everything. Me, because I'm a worker and I like to work on stuff and know what I'm doing, I would probably say go the route of a private team because you're going to learn more. You're going to respect the equipment more. It was a dream of mine when I was a little kid pushing Hot Wheels around that I wanted to drive a monster truck. Never in my wildest dreams did I think it was going to come true, and it actually did. And I'm actually still living my childhood dream of being a monster truck driver, and just don't give up, you know, because it'll happen. You gotta be in the right place at the right time, which I was, fortunately, and I'm still living my dream by doing it. And one of the coolest things is I got some grandkids now, and they're huge into monster trucks. I don't think they realize that Papa used to and kind of slash still is a monster truck driver, but when they get a little older, they're gonna know that, you know, Papa was riding around having some fun jumping trucks back in the day. And hopefully I get to do a show here soon.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, they're teasing it like, is Russell getting back behind the wheel? I know your wife, their door popped and said the grandkids will be so happy. So fingers crossed that can all come together.
So with the, with having the grandkids and them loving monster trucks and all that kind of stuff, I'm kind of forcing them to pick Bounty Hunter and Iron Outlaw as their favorite monster trucks, but everybody seems to go towards the 3D bodied ones. I had talked to Jimmy about doing some shows out here in Turlock so that my grandkids could see me run, because I think them seeing me come out of the window of the truck and it being their papa would really put some big smiles on their faces. But with this pandemic coming out and all that kind of stuff, it just didn't pan out. But I'm pretty sure it's going to happen, whether it's with Jimmy or another team that I've been in contact with, that it's going to happen and my grandkids are going to get to see me drive. And Phil, I'll be the first one to tell you if it happens. I'll let you know, and hopefully you can be there.
We hope so. That'd be really cool. Fingers crossed, man. You never know in this crazy world. But I will tell you this. We've shared a lot of stories here tonight, a lot of memories. And this is the point of the show. We always ask this last question. And it's an interesting answer now knowing that, you know, your phone rings a lot more these days than they were in the past. You know, when this is all said and done, Russell, what do you want your legacy to be?
I guess I would say just that he was a nice guy who took the time to sign every autograph and take every picture with everybody. I know that a lot of the drivers don't really get into the autographs and the pictures and all that. There's been a couple times I've been around town getting a haircut. There's no more hair up there, but when I had hair, a little kid would see me in the barbershop and the mom would come up and tell me that I took a picture with them. Those are the memories that I like, and obviously it sticks in with their heads. I guess it would just be that he was a nice guy and he did everything he could to make every fan walk away with a smile.
Love that response. I can tell you from my perspective, that's always been true, the way you've treated me and always been fair to me and taking the time to, you know, hear my nerd questions and just be a great friend. I've always appreciated that, Russell. And, you know, if I had to answer that question, I think that'd always be your legacy. You've always been a stand-up guy, very honest guy, and just very proud of the places you've been and the things that you've accomplished.
You know, I went all over this country, and I wouldn't have been able to do that if it wasn't for Monster Trucks, and I met a lot of nice, good people along the way. A ton of friends, and one being with you. And one thing I remember about hanging out with you is I believe your dad took us to a Waffle House, and I was blown away by your dad's New York accent. And I was thinking, man, is this guy a mob boss or what? Because he sounds just like one. But I'll always call you a friend, and I appreciate everything you guys have done for what you're doing with this podcast and asking me to be a part of it. I honestly never thought anybody would want to hear my story and to have you guys have me on your show. It's, I could check that off my list, I guess, because this is one of the coolest things I've done.
And your story will forever live in our archives. And just like your son, Justin, says, my dad and his celebrity problems.
So I always let them know, hey, just want to let you guys know your dad's a celebrity. And then with this week, talking to a Monster Truck team and then you calling and wanting me to do your podcast, I sent them all a message and said, hey, just letting you know your celebrity dad is still active. He's still around. People want to know what's going on. So they're just like, whatever. Nobody cares, Dad. So Justin, you said you wanted to drive Bounty. That's not a good question to ask me.
Well, we'll see where that goes from there. One thing's for sure, Russell, your story will forever live here on this podcast. And, you know, hopefully we can all be hanging out in a Waffle House somewhere down the road, whether you're driving for Jimmy Creighton or whoever. Like I said, it sounds like your phone's ringing in. A little bit of a tease, a little bit of a sampler. So hopefully it comes together and we can all have some fun back at the events again with you behind the wheel.
Yeah, I hope it does. I feel good enough to want to get back in and do it. And that itch is always there. So hopefully we can iron out the small parts of this deal and make it come true. And hopefully be able to do a show down by you guys and hang out with you guys and eat some waffles, man.
Little Waffle House.
Fingers crossed. Russell, thank you so much for being on the podcast here tonight. We will see you sooner rather than later.
You bet, guys. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thank you, Russell. We've said it here, man. The way that Russell's always treated me over the years has been super fair and super honest guy. He's a great friend. And just get me so excited. I had to change all the posts. I'm like, oh, is Russell making a return? You know, play it up a little bit. Make everybody tune in.
You never know in the podcast. You never know what you're going to hear in the podcast. Hopefully I can meet Russell. Definitely was awesome hearing his story. But, I mean, you never know what you're going to hear on the podcast. That's why you should tune in every week.
Yeah, you never know.
High hopes for Russell Steele.
Yeah, and if you have his number, he'll answer. He said it here tonight, so never know.
Well,
One thing is for sure, we hear this awkward transition. We will be back here next week with another podcast. I don't know who the guests will be, but we have some people in mind. We have a list. Try to message everybody on that list.
If you're listening right now and you want to be on, send us a message.
Yes, if you feel qualified, we want to hear from you. Send us a message. We've had a lot of different people on here from the past, present, and future of Monster Trucks, from the rising stars to the Hall of Famers, the all-time greats. We've had so many incredible stories. A lot of people that Russell have competed against or even have helped brought up into sport. He's been alongside of so many people. We've more than likely featured them on the podcast. So if you enjoyed tonight's episode, make sure you check out some of our past episodes here on our Facebook page. Go to that video tab or that live tab. You'll see all of our live podcast episodes in the playlist right there. You'll check out our entire library. You'll see Russell's episode in there too, where we'll forever live in our archives. Also, if you like this specific video you just listened to, because you listened to Russell Steele episode, make sure you like this video and you share it all across social media. I know a lot of people couldn't tune in here tonight live. Like I know Two Extreme Racing, they have an event going on right now in Grand Bay, Nebraska. So yeah. So I know Camp Green's probably going to be listening to this in the rig during the week. So make sure you share this video so everybody can go back and rewatch it. Also, wherever you can find this audio only, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Pandora, Anchor, Deezer.
Come on.
What's another big Audible? That's a big one too. Radio.com. Wherever you can find the sound, we have the widest distribution for any Monster Truck podcast. You can download our podcast wherever you're going, on the road, at the job, in the gym, on the airplane, and so much more. You can find our podcast there. And also, since you're here, and if you're liking this video, which I hope you are, and you're sharing this video, which I hope you are, make sure you like our page too. Stay up to date what's going on. We're going to work on confirming that next guest. You'll be here next week. Check out our teaser post, and we'll drop the next video. And who else will be joining us here? What has been a lot of fun, and, you know, we said it here. Vincent said, you know, this has been approaching a year when he started this, and it's really become a point of documenting a lot of stories. And, you know, to some people that we've reached out, maybe, you know, Russell said, like, oh, who would want to hear my story? It's important. We want to, you know, save these stories, and you never know, especially at such an interesting time in Monster Trucks. And it'd be kind of cool, you know, looking back on some of these, you know, stories, especially some of our rising stars at this point in their careers, and then now we have it. And go back 10, 15 years later, and they're winning world championships or whatever. And we had them here at the ground floor. So that's what I enjoy the most, telling a lot of stories. You know, that's like we joke. We're just the idiots with the questions. So you guys enjoy it. Yeah, please supporting us. Please keep supporting us. Thank you for supporting us. We're having a lot of fun. As long as you're having fun, we're going to keep going.
I mean, it doesn't feel like it's been almost a year. You know, I've aged horribly. Aged horribly. Podcast has aged well.
Yes.
We're not slowing down, as we always say.
All right, let's end this. We will see you here next week for another episode of the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast. Take care.